Good afternoon. It is 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, August 24th, 2011. This is Tony Clark, Chairman of the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're here in the Commission hearing room on the 12th floor of the State Capitol in Bismarck. We have, for the 2:30 agenda, a scheduled informal on, I want to make sure I have this right. The 2:30 is the 613 case. Is that correct, or is it the 612? Okay. Our 2:30 case is case number PU-10-612, Enbridge Pipeline, North Dakota, LLC, Bakken Pipeline Project, U.S., Warden, Burke County, siting application. We will be taking up after this at 3 o'clock PU-10-613, which is the Beaver Lodge Loop Project in Williams, Montreal, and Ward Counties. With that, let's handle things this way. We'll have introductions by the commissioners and any welcoming comments, and we'll have everyone who's at the table identify themselves, and we'll pass around the mic and have folks in the room do the same. And then from there, we'll turn it over to applicants, and you can make your case, and then we'll hear from our staff and council after that. So, my fellow commissioners.
Good afternoon. Welcome, Mrs. Kevin Kramer.
Brian Polk, good afternoon and welcome as well.
And joining us from staff?
Patrick Vaughn.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant Attorney General.
From Enbridge?
Brian Biella with the Crowley Fleck Law Firm representing the applicant Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC.
Jim Watts, Senior Legal Counsel for Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota.
Barry Simonson, Project Manager for the main line for Enbridge Energy of Superior, Wisconsin.
And Angie Ronin with Mergent, environmental consultants for the project.
I'm Doug Aller, manager of Lands and Right-of-Way for Enbridge.
Scott Sheldon, staff.
Very good. Okay, with that, Brian, we'll turn it over to you.
Yep, commissioners, we do have a testimony today, I guess, to offer in the normal course that we do, but we obviously, just because of the limited issue, hopefully it's shorter than normal, but we have two witnesses with us today, and I guess there won't be any swearing in or anything like that, I guess, at this point. Okay. Barry, would you please state your name and business address?
So, my name is Barry Simonson. My business address is 1409 Hammond Avenue, Superior, Wisconsin, 54880.
And Barry, what is your position with Enbridge?
My current position is the project manager for the mainline construction of Enbridge's Beaver Lodge Loop Project and Bakken Pipeline Project, U.S.
Commissioners, I guess maybe a little direction from you. We do have a series of questions that we have typically asked of Enbridge witnesses for the project, explaining a little bit about the Enbridge system and then and the justification for it. Do you prefer we go through those?
Consider it's already in the record in this case. I think we can probably skip unless you feel like you need to.
It is in the record already at the main hearing, and the only reason I bring it up is it somewhat is our justification of need. On an application for a waiver procedure and time schedules, you have to have a need base, and so it does justify our need. So,
well, let's go ahead and do it. And I mean, we're going to be here past three either way. So let's use the time.
Okay. Barry, please briefly describe Enbridge's operations.
Enbridge has an extensive natural gas and petroleum pipeline facilities located both in Canada and in the United States. Its largest system, referred to as Enbridge's mainline system, is a liquid petroleum pipeline system spanning from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, around the Great Lakes into Chicago, Illinois, ending in eastern Canada. In addition, Enbridge has significant other pipeline facilities located in both southern and midwestern United States.
And please briefly describe Enbridge's North Dakota system.
What is now the Enbridge North Dakota system was originally known as the Portal Pipeline, constructed back in the 1960s. The original pipeline ran from oil fields north and west of Minot to Grand Forks and into Clearbrook, Minnesota, where it connects with Enbridge's mainline system. Substantial pipeline additions were made both by Portal Pipeline and Enbridge after it acquired Portal in 1996.
And then please briefly describe the recent capacity expansions on Enbridge's North Dakota system.
Enbridge has been responding to increased transportation requirements due to crude oil production in North Dakota since 2005. In January 2010, Enbridge completed a 51,600-barrel-per-day expansion, which increased capacity of the North Dakota system to 161,600 barrels per day, effectively doubling its pipeline capacity into the Clearbrook Terminal.
And what is driving the need for the system expansions in North Dakota?
The primary driver of our expansion projects is the rapid development of the Bakken Shale Formation in North Dakota and in Montana, coupled with our shippers' needs to have a pipeline connection to a variety of refinery markets served by Enbridge's mainline system. Many new wells in the Bakken have greatly increased North Dakota's oil production to where North Dakota is the fourth highest crude oil producing state in the United States. Bakken production has risen from 26 million barrels in 2007 to 250 million barrels in 2009. With that, the demand of crude oil transportation in Enbridge's system has increased as North Dakota's daily production has grown from 86,000 barrels per day in 2006 to more than 320,000 barrels per day in 2010. To handle these greatly increased volumes, our shippers have requested additional pipeline capacity. In addition, all indications are that the Bakken Formation will continue to experience extensive development for many years to come. Currently, there are approximately 160 rigs operating in the state of North Dakota, and indications are that rig count will only increase for the foreseeable future. For these reasons, Enbridge seeks to meet its shippers' demands and assist the state of North Dakota in getting oil into markets, and is proceeding with the expansion plans to its North Dakota system. Part of our expansion plans include the Bakken Pipeline Project U.S. and Beaver Lodge Loop Project, both of which are being considered today.
And showing you what has been marked as Enbridge Exhibit BP1, would you please identify it?
This is the application of Enbridge's Pipelines North Dakota LLC to the North Dakota Public Service Commission for an amended corridor certificate and route permit for the requested deviation of its Bakken Pipeline Project U.S.
And has the Public Service Commission previously granted a corridor certificate and route permit for the Bakken Pipeline Project U.S.?
Yes, on May 5th, 2011, following a public hearing, the Commission issued Certificate of Corridor Compatibility Number 118 and Route Permit Number 128, approving this project.
And what is the purpose of the approved Bakken Pipeline Project U.S.?
The purpose of the project is to create additional transportation capacity for crude oil produced primarily from the Bakken and Three Forks formations in the Williston Basin of North Dakota. By creating additional pipeline capacity on what Enbridge calls Line 26, from Enbridge's Berthold Station to the Canadian border, to allow for increased transportation of oil into Enbridge's mainline system located in Canada.
And what is the proposed crude oil capacity of the Bakken Pipeline Project U.S.?
The proposed annual capacity for the project is 145,800 barrels per day, with proposed design capacity of 162,000 barrels per day.
And has Enbridge commenced construction on the Bakken Pipeline Project?
Yes, construction has started on August 15th of 2011.
And why is Enbridge requesting these route deviations?
The answer is twofold. First, Enbridge is committed to maintaining favorable landowner relations. The landowners on the original route granted survey permission, which Enbridge believed was a strong indication of the landowner's willingness to cooperate. However, the landowner refused to grant Enbridge an easement. Rather than condemn the landowner, Enbridge chose to avoid confrontation by adjusting its route onto lands where Enbridge had previously acquired options. And both of those landowners subsequently granted easements to Enbridge. Second, Enbridge is able to enhance the quality of its pipeline by making the slight adjustments to the south and west, which this enhancement results in avoiding impacts to three wetlands.
And please briefly describe the proposed deviation in more detail.
Enbridge calls this proposed deviation the Johnson deviation. The deviation begins at milepost 39.45, where the pipeline centerline must be adjusted to the south and further west between milepost 39.45 in section 3, township 162 north, range 92 west, and milepost 39.91 in section 34, township 163 north, range 92 west. This minor route deviation will consist of approximately 2,465 feet of 12-inch diameter pipeline, and of that total, only 1,142 feet will be located outside of Enbridge's permitted corridor, while the remaining 1,323 feet are located within the permitted corridor. This deviation will also require Enbridge to relocate the bore location and temporary workspaces for its Highway 5 crossing. Enbridge will maintain the same construction footprint and right-of-way requirements as approved by this commission in case number PU-10-612. Enbridge believes that the proposed Johnson deviation is in the public interest and respectfully requests that the commission permit Enbridge to proceed with this minor centerline adjustment.
And what is the anticipated in-service date for the Bakken Pipeline project?
The estimated construction completion date is on or before the fourth quarter of 2012, with estimated in-service date of January 1, 2013.
Now, Barry, you're aware that the notice period for someone to request a hearing does not expire until September 6. Does Enbridge need to start construction on the deviations prior to that date?
Yes.
And why does Enbridge need to start construction prior to that date?
The contractors that Enbridge has hired are on site, and Enbridge will incur substantial costs should it have to construct the permitted portions of the project and then have the contractors return later to construct deviations. At this point, it's anticipated that the costs that Enbridge would incur will amount to around $710,000.
So those are additional costs.
Additional costs.
And why can't Enbridge construct other portions of the Bakken Pipeline Project U.S. and then construct the deviations after the September 7, assuming they would be approved?
As previously noted, Enbridge would incur substantial contractor costs for skipping, having the contractor go around the particular tracks or set of tracks, constructing the facilities, and then returning later to construct the deviations.
And am I correct, this is at the end of the construction, so they would basically have to be stopped?
That's correct.
And if the commission was willing to do so, is Enbridge willing to accept the risk that even though the Public Service Commission may grant the route deviation requests earlier than September 7, that a person may request a hearing on or before September 6?
Yes.
And is Enbridge willing to accept the risk that even though the Public Service Commission may grant the route deviation request, a person may still request a formal hearing, at which time the Public Service Commission could potentially reverse its decision and Enbridge may be required to permanently cease construction of the deviations and even remove facilities already constructed?
Yes.
So am I correct in my understanding that Enbridge is willing to accept these risks should the commission issue an order allowing the deviations to start construction prior to the expiration of the notice period on September 6?
Yes.
And does Enbridge request that the commission issue an order approving the deviations and permitting Enbridge to start construction immediately?
Yes.
I have no further questions of this witness.
Okay. I think I understand Enbridge's desire for speed, but is the risk solely borne by Enbridge in this case? I mean, the purpose of a siting case is to protect cultural resources, you know, human resources, environmental resources, things like that. Now, this is a fairly small deviation. I don't know if it's likely that we're going to run into an irreparable wetland or archaeological site or something else, but that is sort of the purpose of the Siting Act, is to protect those things, and it would seem like the risk we're trying to is not just borne solely by Enbridge in moving forward, but is also borne by these resources that we're here to protect. And maybe that's more a statement than a question, but maybe if you could respond to it.
If I might, Commissioner, first of all, we do have our environmental witness here with Mergent. They've already done a complete environmental study, wetlands, cultural resources. They've received SHPO clearance. So I believe the environmental cultural resource matters are cleared as in a normal case already on these deviations.
Simply due process. I mean, are we allowed
landowners?
And what basis legally would we have the ability to issue something before the 20 days have expired for the landowner to comment? Is there an exception that you can point us to? Anything in the statutes that just allows us to grant it and then either hope nobody objects or go back and revisit it later?
Well, I believe the Siting Act itself gives pretty extraordinary powers to the commission, including emergency powers to take action as it deems prudent on a virtual immediate basis should it need to or want to. So I think there is just power is justified or allowed by the Siting Act. And in this case, as I say, Enbridge is willing to accept any and all risk should the worst-case scenario
develop. Even the emergency powers deal with, you know, danger to life, limb, property, or something of that nature, not financial danger to Enbridge.
Well, I think it says a demonstrable emergency. I guess in this case, you know, we're talking a substantial amount of money. That is certainly our demonstrable emergency.
Wouldn't that have been avoided by having an agreement with the landowner before the last hearing?
Well, as Mr. Simonson has testified, we had a access easement. Is that the right terminology?
Survey
access permission from that previous landowner, leading Enbridge to believe that it wasn't going to be a problem. It turned out, as I understand, and we have a land person testify if we need to, but as I understand, they later decided that they already had several pipelines on their property. They just didn't want any more. So,
it would be helpful if, I mean, see, you guys have colored maps. We have different maps. If you kind of walk through exactly what you're talking about, because it's a pretty small deviation, and it looks like my viewpoint that the landowner still is going to have pipelines in their land. It just might be somewhere different. It's the same. It looks like the same parcel of land almost.
Great. I believe in your applications you should have colored maps, but I do have some extra ones here if you'd like.
Yes, that'd be helpful.
Yep. So is this the first part of construction of the pipeline?
This would be the end.
The end?
The northern half. So if you're looking at the lignite replacement section, we're starting from the south, progressing to the north. So this would be on the northern end.
And you said the in-service date would be 2012? December 2012, I believe is what you said?
For the whole system.
Okay.
But this project is slated to be completed with our contractor at the end of this year. Essentially mechanically complete.
I guess my feeling, I think everything's fine, seems in order, it's completely reasonable, it's minor to de minimis, except for if there's some legal basis by which we can issue an order prior to the public comment period. That's my, if there's a good solid, if we can have a good reason, solid legal argument to do it, I've certainly been inclined to do it. I just want to make sure we do, I guess. And I don't know, but demonstrable, if that's a pretty broad term, I guess. I don't know.
In past cases, we've tended to treat it as Mitch suggested.
Yeah, I agree.
Which
is
life-limb property, reliability.
I do have another couple legal questions. In the application, that's actually your request for deviation. It's on page... Well, it's under the avoidance areas. You talk about the waiver from the affected landowner. I assume that's this Douglas Johnson, who we have the letter from, attachment B. Is that the landowner whose property?
I'd have to refer that to our land agent.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
And then
answer.
It also talks about.
Mitch, excuse me. Would you like our land agent to answer that question?
He nodded his head. Yes.
Okay.
And then the environmental assessment. Talks about the 250, the stuff that's outside the current corridor has been surveyed environmentally, so on and so forth. But I don't see, I guess, that environmental report in here for that extra area that's outside of the permit area. Do we have that in this filing? I didn't see anything. The cultural report, the cultural resources. Do we have that for that extra?
Angela?
Sure. I guess I'd like to look at specifically what he's referring to, but
we've got the wetlands.
Okay, let me just take a quick peek if you don't mind. So attachment C, there's a letter from the State Historic Preservation Office, and then attachment, you're right, let me see. The actual cultural report may not be in here. I do have a copy of it with me, though.
I think we'd like to see it because...
Sure.
While I believe that the SHPO letter is reference to that, I can't tell without seeing the environmental report underlying it because it references just a number that was submitted to them. So this attachment C, then, is for this extra area outside the previously permitted corridor.
That is correct.
Mr. Simonson, is it Am I correct that the two easements from the new affected landowners are in place at this time?
That's correct.
I believe that's all the questions that I have. Pat, did you have anything further?
No, just in curiosity. Yes.
I had a question about the landowner waiver, and you indicated in your application that the waiver really wasn't required, but you did obtain it, so that's good. But it's not required because it's not a inhabited building that is within the 500 feet?
I guess I'd have to ask.
I think that's Angela. Angela, can you respond to that? Or?
Yes, that is correct. Yes.
Okay.
Just going on the map here, they're so darn close. I'm trying to find, and I think Brian was asking this too. Where are the two landowners? Where's the property line that we're avoiding by?
The property that we're avoiding.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that would be helpful for all three, or for me. You go ahead and use this if you want while you talk through it.
Hold it up here so hopefully you can all see it. The red line was the original route, which was approved.
Right.
The property lines aren't on here. However, if you see this utility type installation here, their property line goes approximately a little ways past our original route. So that would have been one landowner. And then this big farm field the rest of the way over to this line right here is the second landowner. The landowner that has the big field part were the brothers that said, no, we don't want any more pipelines on our property. So we went back down to this woman that owns this big farm down here, who had already granted us an option for an easement, which we hadn't exercised yet, for the red line. We went back to her and explained what we were needing, requiring to go along the blue line. And she consented and said yes, and she subsequently granted an easement for that portion of the red line, then the blue line up to here,
so
the new
really
route.
To the west of that utility installation that's sort of where the line...
Correct. That we're right on the white line is the dash line is the property line that runs north and south approximately. So once we cross the road into this facility, it's like a storage area for trucks and equipment and so forth that these people have, the Johnsons have. They had already granted us, likewise, an option for this red line across the top of their land. We went back to them also and told them what we were up against story here, and he said, yes, I'll give you the option for the easement to come along my property line and turn and then tie into the red line and go over to our valve site. He subsequently granted us an easement for this new route also.
You said the bottom, it's tough to explain, but the southwest part of the area you talked about, so you said that this person was okay with it. Couldn't you snake a pipeline through there without staying inside the corridor? So that's your problem. Right?
That's our problem. Would have been right here. It was still the
Well, couldn't you
that
come straight west and minimize it even less, though, so you're just barely outside the corridor?
From where? I'm not following you there. We'd have to get
access to follow it all the way
up to here. But then we wouldn't be able to get through their facilities here. We would have had to stay on their facilities. In their north line.
And what changed the landowners?
Oh, that's the issue.
Is it a cost issue? They don't want it.
They just, they were brothers that are joint owners there, and they just decided that they didn't want any more pipelines. I don't think it was a financial matter. You know, to them, from us to them, they just didn't want another pipeline. So if these other two landowners that were already full and willing to grant a different route across their properties, we went that direction.
So that I'm clear on your timeline then, for us to do what you're asking, you need us to probably have a special meeting even, because our next scheduled meeting is September 7th. So you're saying you want to get going real soon.
Yes.
construction timeline, though, if we did it, let the proper timelines go, and the crew just, I mean, the crew, you're predicting an exact timeline when you're going to be up here. That what if it doesn't hold, and there is enough time to do it, quote, unquote, the right way, and still keep the construction goes going? You're hedging how much time they're going to take to get there.
You must be days away.
What we do, yeah, we have, you know, from our contractor, we've requested updates to their schedule on a daily basis, basically. And so in regard to this exercise and with these route deviations, we got into the details a little bit more, wanting to know, you know, it's like an assembly line. So we wanted to know when they'll be there for grading, with stringing, ditching, et cetera. So that's how we're gauging this. And the way the workforce that Michaels, our contractor, has proposed and has on site now, it's realistic that this they'll be there. They would be there prior to September 2nd in this case.
And when is the 20 days up? The 6th?
Yeah. It is the 6th. I remember because when we scheduled it for action, it was the September 7th. We were safe by a day.
I mean, that's assuming no rain.
Right. How many days does it take? How far do they go in a day?
It depends on that. The northern section with clearing, we do a lot of potholing on our existing line, 82 that run, or line 26 that runs north-south. So that takes some time once that's done. The grading, they'll probably do a mile a day of grading.
My understanding is I think this was 12 miles.
It is,
12
yeah.
miles, and they're starting from the south, and this is on the north.
Yeah.
And so they can get at least up to where the red and blue lines meet on your map.
Right.
And deviation-wise, still within the corridor, another half mile.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. On this map, are they at mile marker 39 right now, or are they somewhere further south?
I'd have to look at our progress report from yesterday. Give you the definite answer on that.
Were they yesterday morning?
Yesterday morning, they were probably potholing still and haven't. They've probably cleared about 17% of the right of way.
How far away? You mean the whole thing?
70% of the 12 miles. So we'll call it one mile, 1.7 miles.
That sounds to me like you're still maybe 11 days if you go a mile a day away from getting towards this area.
That could be true if they didn't ramp up, but they're ramping up their workforce every day. So we've got probably a total of 160 workers out there with equipment and whatnot. So they want to get – Michaels wants to be done. Contractually, we have to be done by a certain date. So it's progression, basically, is how it works. So they may be – potholing right now is slow, and then the clearing will get done quicker. But then when they're ramped up, they'll start grading further quickly.
I mean, I agree with Kevin to a degree. Where if there's a way within the law, I mean, I understand it's a minor deviation. If we can address it, then I think we should. I'm suspicious that declaring this an emergency situation is not. And that's seems like a tough road to hoe for me. But in being overly flexible, speculating. Are we creating a bit of a moral hazard here for the commission where what's caused this issue in the timeline is the access. It's the easement issue with one particular landowner where that easement wasn't locked and loaded and solid and on time. I mean, you happen to have a situation here where there's a willing landowner somewhere else, but, you know, that's sort of but by the grace of God. I mean, eventually this could have been one of those situations where you're heading towards a eminent domain proceeding, which takes a lot longer than the 4-day delay that we're talking about here. I mean, is this just a case where it's you know, lesson learned, word to the wise, you got to have those easements in place before you stage certain things, because if you run things too tight, these are problems that happen.
There definitely can be in terms of scheduling. That's obviously true if we were to go to a condemnation with the landowner, that would, and we knew that up front that we were going to have potential issues. We would rethink.
You're talking about
we would rethink our construction
2014.
Schedule. Right. So, yeah. But it's not. It's a work in progress. I think when you're dealing with how you're planning construction and especially with the variables with environmental surveys, and you get landowner negotiations, and our right of way department, you know, does their due diligence and what they trying to appease everyone. So,
I think we've got corridor issue here, you know, and if there's that's where the notice issue is most important. So I mean, if I'd be interested in seeing the legal authority for it.
Could I comment, Mitch, on that? Well, our application today is an application for waiver of procedures and time schedules, and that's under 49.2207.2. And if I might, could I just read part of this? It says the commission, after hearing and upon a finding that the proposed facility is such of a length, design, location, or purpose that it will produce minimal adverse effects, or after hearing and upon a finding that a demonstrable emergency exists which requires immediate construction and then adherence to procedures and time schedules would jeopardize the utility system, so in either event, may issue an order waiving specified procedures and time schedules required by this chapter or by the rules adopted pursuant to this chapter, including but not limited to applications, notices, and hearings, and may forthwith issue a certificate of site compatibility, a certificate of corridor compatibility, or a route permit with such conditions as the commission may require.
Isn't that exactly what we've done with the notice and saying if there's a written objection, get us your objection or request a hearing, and then we'll determine whether good cause exists to require another hearing? I mean, that's where we're at there. We have a notice out there asking landowners or the public to object by September 6th.
Yeah.
And if they haven't, then we can decide whether a formal hearing is required or not, or necessary.
I guess the way I read it is I think the commission has very broad discretion under this and could issue an order as we request conditioned upon the risk, Enbridge's assumption of all of these risks. If we all remember Bill Binnick used to say we can, under this law, you can waive everything. It's kind of a favorite comment, I guess. But anyway, so that I think that's where our authority would have to reside.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tony and Kevin have kind of laid their thoughts out. I don't disagree with what they said at all. I think there's probably minimal impact in some of those areas, but I don't really see any. I like the September 6th time frame. We can do it right that way, and I go back to these folks and talk to them again, but I think by the 6th, I'm not convinced that timeline you have doesn't give you the flexibility so you can plan it so everything can all come together in the 6th and you build it the right way and everything comes together.
Yeah, I don't question your – I'm not a construction expert, and you know – your construction people know where they're going to be on any given time with perfect weather or whatever, but I do feel a little bit – I would feel a little bit bad giving landowners until a certain date to comment and then not giving them until that certain date to comment. That's a moral dilemma for me. anyway.
We do need to get that environmental report filed for that, whatever's outside the corridor there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. There's a larger discussion the three of us might have to have another time about some of these corridors. Maybe this is the second time we find ourselves in some corridor debates. Maybe we've made some of these corridors too small, mm-hmm. where when these things come up, we find ourselves in these situations.
Well, I think that's a little bit of Tony's earlier comment. The company has already taken some risks, choosing a corridor without uncooperative landowners, or at least not secured, choosing a narrower corridor, which, of course, limits your flexibility, and all those things, those are all risks that the company chose to take. I'm not one that tries to impose less risk on the company if the company is willing to take the risk. But this is the corridor we're working off of. Well, now, let me ask.
Reality is, given our current statutes, large corridors are going to be tougher for utility companies to get easements for.
Yeah.
Right? Because as a landowner, if you have a huge corridor on your property, I mean, I'd probably be asking too about how many pipelines are, the 8th, 9th, and 10th pipeline that's going to be using this corridor. So narrower corridors are easier to...
Yeah. Let me ask you this. The date for comment is the 6th. Our next meeting is the 7th, which this would be on the agenda for, I presume, Pat, right?
I wouldn't be against having meetings in the 6th.
I wouldn't either if that helped, So, I mean, that would be...
5 o'clock. 5 o'clock, say close of business, 5 o'clock.
Yeah.
Be done with it.
So we could do that for what it's worth.
If we don't get any comments.
Right. Yeah. And I I mean, I don't know why you would. You've got the approval of the landowners.
Was it your intent to submit proposed findings or something on your application?
Yes. I think we would.
Is a done deal. You don't think going back to the landowners here one more time, and you think that ship has already sailed? There's no way that these folks will work something out with you.
Once I said no,
yeah.
They had originally given survey consent and was working with us.
I think we would concur with the comments about maybe the corridor's gotten a little bit too narrow, and you know maybe we could look at a little flexibility. And I think company would probably be willing to do a thorough cultural resource study, let's say on 500 feet or whatever, mm-hmm. 600 feet, would be willing to do that and present at the time of the hearing a full cultural resource report on the full 500-600 feet if we could.
Here, though, even the corridor is even smaller than it is in other parts of the the route, right? I mean, it looks like it becomes very narrow right at this little, I mean, almost like a little gooseneck there. Mm-hmm. And then it's wider north of that curve. I don't know why that was, but was an attempt to just not need to worry about that. You tell the Johnson property to the west.
I'm not certain, Your Honor. Can you answer, Angela?
Yeah, I think I can speak to that. Generally, the environmental survey corridor that we surveyed along the route was 250 feet.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some breakout areas where we did like some additional temporary workspace areas. And it just happens to be, I think, that this is probably 200 feet here where it necks back down and similar to the rest of this as well.
Commissioners, we did have a few questions of Angela, too,
yeah.
If you'd like to.
Let's go for
have
it.
Those addressed?
Sure.
Do that now?
Yep.
Angela, just please state your name and business address.
My name is Angela Ronayne. I'm an employee of Mergent, Enbridge's environmental consultant. My current business address is 615 First Avenue Northeast, Suite 425, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55413.
And Angela, what is your position with Mergent?
I'm a senior analyst, environmental analyst. I serve as Mergent's project manager for Enbridge's Bakken Pipeline Project U.S.
And skipped to number four. Were you involved in preparation of environmental and cultural resource reports, which is part of Enbridge's deviation request in this case?
Yes.
And as a purpose of your testimony today, to describe the environmental and cultural resource matters pertaining to this deviation request?
Yes.
And with respect to the proposed route deviation, would you describe how this compares with the approved pipeline route?
The Johnson deviation has the same or less impacts as the Public Service Commission approved route.
And within the deviated area, was there any exclusion areas identified?
No.
Were there any avoidance areas identified?
No. While there were two private buildings within 500 feet of the Johnson deviation, the private buildings are not inhabited residences, schools, or places of business. Enbridge did, however, obtain a waiver from the landowner.
And will any of the Public Service Commission's selection criteria or policy criteria be impacted?
No, we concluded that the Johnson deviation will have no adverse impacts on location, construction, and operation of the project as previously approved by this commission, nor will it alter any of the commitments provided in the commission's policy criteria.
And has the study been completed with respect to cultural resources, wetlands, and protected species?
Yes, additional field survey work has been performed, with the results being that the State Historic Preservation Office of North Dakota by letter has concurred that there will be no historical properties affected by the route deviation. In addition, we have submitted a wetlands delineation report, which did not identify any wetland impacts along the deviation route. In addition, the deviation avoids impacts to three wetland areas, two of which were impacted by the original route, and there are no critical habitat areas.
And in your opinion, if the Johnson deviation is constructed as set forth in the application and discussed at this hearing, will there be any significant long-term irreversible effects to the environment or cultural resources?
No.
I have no further questions. And, Commissioners, that concludes our presentation on this project.
Thanks. When did Enbridge know for certain that this was not going to work on the existing route?
I don't know the dates offhand, but it would have been probably in
late, early summer, late spring. Don't you think that would be fairly
late
accurate?
Spring. Late spring.
Any other questions for Enbridge on the application? This sounds like one where we may need a discussion afterwards, and I don't know if legal counsel feels like you need to have a day to kind of ponder it or not before making any recommendation to us. But
I haven't heard anything that's convinced me that we can issue a decision before the 20 days of have gone, I'd be willing to consider something, setting it forth in more detail for me. But from that perspective, I haven't seen it. Plus, we still have, there is some, I'm not sure even if we did waive it, we'd get it out before September 6th. We've got to get proposed findings drawn. We've got to get the Class 3 filed and looked at. I don't know how big it is. I'm assuming it's not. So I'm not sure we're talking a matter of, I think we ultimately end up talking a matter of maybe 3 or 4 days here anyway. But I'd be interested in reviewing any law that allows us to do this before the 20 days are up. But as I sit here, I'm not comfortable with it legally.
Do you need the company to offer the application as evidence?
Yep, we'd offer exhibit number one.
I don't know that I'm the ruler, but I guess we'll receive exhibit number
one. Okay.
Well.
And the, I guess a late filed exhibit number two on the cultural resource report.
I guess I'd put myself in the camp of skeptical that, that there may be a way out of this, but willing to, if there's a
there is.
Some guess sort of submission to consider it.
What I would
I don't know if that means we need to go ahead and schedule a work session or not.
What I would propose to the company is, send us two sets of proposed findings, one that waives the 20-day period setting forth how we can get there, step by step, and make us comfortable with it. Obviously, we'll review it. And then another set that, is after September 6th. And we can take a look at it. I think, obviously, obviously, I hate that word, but I think we need a work session if we're going to further discuss the
first
issue
one.
Once
yeah.
That's brought in.
I would agree.
But it'd be nice to make sure that we have a scenario where everything is ready to go on September 6th, if that becomes the route we go, that if all of a sudden we don't approve something, that the 6th were ready to do something that day as well. So is that a third thing that we would have to get done with you guys?
I guess that comes down to, and we haven't seen the Class 3, but from a legal perspective, I haven't seen anything in this application that causes me, from a legal perspective, to say, no, we've got environmental issues or things of that nature that we would have to discuss in a work session. So it'd be an issue if the commission wants a work session on the merits of it, aside from the 20-day question.
I'd be ready to, aside from the 20-day, I'd be ready to do something at 5:01 on the 6th.
Is that the way it works? Does it have to wait till 5 o'clock that day? Is that
close of business?
Landowners
probably
have to close
the
business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. We will get you
that sounds like a
two sets of proposed findings.
Thank you. All right. And we can decide later just via staff if we feel like we need to discuss it in a work session.
That's right.
All right. Is there anything further on 612? Okay, hearing nothing, let's move to PU-10-613, Beaver Lodge Loop Project, Williams, Montreal, in Ward County siting application. This is, I suppose we should formally open it, being that this is our 3 o'clock item. It's about 3:15 right now. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission. We're meeting in the commission hearing room, 12th floor. Of the state capitol, for the record, this is Tony Clark. I'm joined by my fellow commissioners, Brian Kalk and Kevin Kramer. We have one item on the 3 o'clock agenda, which is PU-10-613. With that, again, for the record, why don't we have Kevin and Brian, if you want to make a few introductory comments, and we'll go around and introduce ourselves.
Kevin Kramer, good afternoon.
Brian Culp, good afternoon.
Pat.
Patrick Fun, Commission staff.
Mitch Armstrong, Special Assistant to Attorney General.
And here from Enbridge.
Brian Biela with the Crowley Fleck Law Firm, representing Enbridge Pipelines, North Dakota, LLC, the applicant.
Jim Watts, Senior Legal Counsel, Enbridge.
Barry Simonson, Project Manager, Mainline, Enbridge.
Angie Ronane, Mergent, Enbridge's Environmental Consultant.
And Doug Aller, Manager of Lands and Right-of-Way for Enbridge.
Okay, very good. With that, let's turn it over to Brian, and you can...
Thank you, Commissioners. Just a point of in our previous case, we did use our witness to discuss about the need-based items, and believe we have established need under the criteria. I guess we're wondering if you would concur and if you would like us to go through that again.
I think we could incorporate the audio from the previous hearing into the record in this matter as far as the history and the need goes. The hearing that was just informal that was just held at 2:30 on PU-10-612.
Okay. Thank you very much. And again, we'll start with Barry Simonson.
Just a quick before you can have a similar type of map because we always have a
yes.
Black and white. If you could get out ahead of time, that'd be helpful.
Just for the record, please state your name and business address.
My name is Barry Simonson, and my business address is 1409 Hammond Avenue in Superior, Wisconsin, 54880.
And your position with Enbridge, Barry?
My current position is the project manager for mainline construction of Enbridge's Beaver Lodge Loop and Bakken Pipeline Project, U.S.
And Barry, we'll skip to question number 7 then. And showing you what it was marked as... Exhibit, Enbridge Exhibit BLLP-1, would you please identify it?
This is the application of Enbridge's Pipeline, Enbridge Pipelines North Dakota LLC to the North Dakota Public Service Commission for an amended corridor certificate and route permit for the requested route deviations for its Beaver Lodge Loop project.
And Barry, has the Public Service Commission previously granted a corridor certificate and route permit for the Beaver Lodge Loop project?
Yes, on May 18th, following a public hearing, the Commission issued Certificate of Corridor Compatibility number 119 and Route Permit number 129 approving this project.
And what is the purpose of the approved Beaver Lodge Loop project?
The project is an expansion of Enbridge's North Dakota transmission line system designed to add an incremental export capacity from Beaver Lodge Station in Williams County to Berthold Station in Ward County. The project will accommodate the receipt of new and increasing volumes of production in crude oil gathering areas in Williams, McKenzie, and Montreal counties. Although independent, this project complements the Bakken Pipeline Project U.S. by providing incremental capacity along the existing route through through construction of a new transmission feeder line designed to transport up to 145,800 barrels per day into Berthold.
And what is the proposed crude oil capacity for the Beaver Lodge Loop project?
The proposed annual capacity for the Beaver Lodge Loop project is 145,800 barrels per day, with the proposed design capacity of being 162,000 barrels per day.
And has construction started on the Beaver Lodge Loop project?
Yes. Enbridge commenced construction on August 10, 2011.
And why is Enbridge requesting the route deviations?
There are three reasons. The primary reason for this request is to accommodate the landowner's request to relocate the pipeline to the south end of the property. The landowner requested shifting the original route to the south to abut an existing Burlington Northern Santa Fe railroad line. In the interest of cooperating with landowners and abutting an existing railroad right-of-way, Enbridge agreed to shift its easement and pipeline route to the south. A secondary reason is to slightly alter the approved route due to a restricted area adjacent to a United States Air Force missile site, all located in proximity to Enbridge's Berthold Station in Ward County. The third reason for these route deviation requests is to comply with the pipe depth requirement dictated by BNSF's crossing permit. BNSF now requires increased pipe depth when crossing its facilities, resulting in the relocation of Enbridge's bore pit and boring equipment outside the approved corridor in order to safely complete pipe installation.
And Barry, am I correct in my understanding that BNSF has recently using a third-party agent and that you've seen requirements shift considerably?
Yes, that's correct.
And that's been a quite recent?
Very recent, yes.
Okay. Now, please describe the proposed deviations in more detail.
What we have described as the Minuteman deviation begins at milepost 0.19, where the pipeline center line must be adjusted to the south and further west between milepost 0.19 in section 20, township 156 north, range 86 west, and milepost 1.75 in section 19, township 156 north, range 86 west, all being located in Ward County. The Minuteman deviation will consist of approximately 8,735 feet of 16-inch diameter pipeline. Of that total, approximately 8,085 feet will be located outside of the approved corridor. The remaining 650 feet are located within the approved corridor. Enbridge has received an easement from the landowners, and this deviation provides the primary benefit of accommodating the affected landowner's request to locate the adjusted center line immediately adjacent to and along the BNSF railroad for the majority of its length. A secondary benefit of this route deviation request is that it provides a buffer zone around the United States Air Force J-3 Minuteman missile silo. The second deviation is for the additional temporary workspace. Enbridge plans to expand its existing southernmost boundary to include extra temporary workspace that is approximately 152 feet by 125 feet in size and covers approximately 19,000 square feet. The extra temporary workspace will be located on the south side of the railroad crossing in section 24, township 156 north, range 87 west, Ward County. The extra workspace is necessary to facilitate the new depth requirements to cross BNSF Railroad at milepost 2.36, and the actual pipeline bore will remain within the approved corridor. Enbridge has received a temporary easement from the landowner.
And what is the anticipated in-service date for the Beaver Lodge Loop project?
The estimated construction completion date is on or before the beginning of the fourth quarter of 2012, with an estimated in-service date of January 1, 2013.
And with respect to requests for deviations for the Beaver Lodge Loop project at Berthold, are the contractors on site now?
Yes.
And how soon would Enbridge like to start construction on the deviations at Berthold?
Right away.
Now, the notice period for someone to request a hearing does not expire until September 6th. Does Enbridge need to start construction on the deviations prior to that date?
Yes.
And why does Enbridge need to start construction prior to that date?
The contractors are on site currently, and Enbridge will incur substantial additional costs should it have to construct the permitted portions on the project and then have the contractors return later to construct the deviations. It's anticipated that the cost to do this for Enbridge will be around $140,000.
And as I understand, Barry, this is also at the end of the project?
It is. That's correct.
And why can't Enbridge construct other portions of its facility in the vicinity of Berthold and then construct the deviations after September 7, assuming they would be approved?
As previously noted, Enbridge would incur substantial contractor costs for constructing the facilities at Berthold and then returning later to construct the deviations.
And does Enbridge realize that if the Public Service Commission were to grant this request, that Enbridge would have to accept the risk of someone requesting a hearing on or before September 6?
Yes.
And does Enbridge also realize that if the Public Service Commission were to grant this request, Enbridge runs the risk of a formal hearing being requested and the Commission reversing its decision, and Enbridge would be forced to permanently cease construction of the deviations, would have to remove the facilities already constructed?
Yes.
And am I correct in my understanding that Enbridge is willing to accept these risks should the Commission issue an order allowing construction to start prior to the expiration of the notice period on September 6?
Yes.
And does Enbridge request the Commission issue an order approving the deviations and permitting Enbridge to start construction immediately?
Yes.
That concludes our testimony.
Could you go over once again? You said that the secondary benefit was to move it outside of the Minuteman buffer.
Yeah.
What was the primary driver again?
It was the primary driver was landowner-driven request to relocate the pipeline to the south, closer to the BNSF railroad. Okay. Right away.
This buffer, I don't recall it in the original hearing. Is that an Air Force issue? They would rather have you outside of that, or is it
preference.
What our preference, or what establishes this sort of 1,200-foot buffer? I guess I just don't remember it from the original hearing.
Anyone can chime in, Doug, if you wanted to, but yeah. I don't think we really had a.
I'll answer that, Barry.
Okay.
Could you get a mic?
Just have a mic, yeah.
as you probably all know, that the Air Force does have a missile site right there, the shadow or the wider space under there. They do have an easement. It's about a quarter-mile easement for no above-ground buildings and appurtenances and so forth, which is representative of that circle there. And it wasn't as really clear that they wouldn't allow us to actually build our pipeline through there. And the red line represents our original route, which we wanted to do. But the landowner that actually owns the land surrounding the missile site, from here down to here, several 60 or 80 acres, they were the couple that requested. They said, no, we don't want you going through the center. We want you to go down and hug the railroad property, mm-hmm. which then we relocated the route to go down along that property. And subsequently going west, we stayed down there until we got up to this wetland over here. So it involved three landowners along there.
So previously, did you have an easement from, or did you need one from DOD to, would they have been okay with you constructing it in the, within that buffer?
That those discussions didn't go all the way to fruition to the end, whether they would or not. And it was becoming mute when this landowner is saying, no, go down to the railroad.
Okay, got it.
Because by moving down the railroad, we get outside of that circle of influence there.
Okay.
And subsequently, all three of those landowners did grant us an easement down along the railroad tracks.
Thanks. That's actually helpful for future cases. There's obviously a lot of pipelines in this part of the state and missile silos as well, so it's kind of a good rule of thumb to remember, I guess, for the future that 1,200 feet might be a good radius to
but
keep
it poses
a buffer.
A different scenario than, well, there's no way that becomes a usable piece of property, depending how this turns out. Going by in that radius, it's got to move. Where before there was maybe some other options. So this, when did you know that there was going to be concerns with the airbase? Because that, regardless whether the landowners wanted to move it or not, that needed to be moved, brought up at that point.
Those were all starting to occur.
Those were all being brought to light around the same time earlier this spring. And that's when we started to say, okay, what are our options? We got to, you know, find a viable option to keep the route going through there. Again, keeping our company's intent to have favorable landowner relations.
Have you actually talked to anybody from DOD?
I have not personally. We have had, they also have cables in there, I believe, Barry, that we were in touch with them talking about their cables crossing through there too. So.
Let me make one clarification for the record, and just so I'm clear, I don't think it makes a difference, but earlier when we were talking about incorporating the audio hearing from the other hearing, I mentioned it was for the need and the other things for the project. I think we should incorporate the entire audio from the prior hearing where we discussed also the emergency request also, so we don't have to go over all of that stuff again. Is that all right with
That's
everybody?
Acceptable, yes.
Okay. Good. Further questions on this? And Angie, should
yes,
we testify?
Just a few questions.
Okay, so any more for Barry on these? The other one is very minor, it would appear.
Yeah.
Okay. Angie, please state your name and business address.
My name is Angela Ronan. I'm an employee of Mergent, Inc., Enbridge's environmental consultant. My current business address is 615 First Avenue Northeast, Suite 425, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 55413.
And what is your position with Mergent?
I'm a senior environmental analyst. I serve as Mergent's project manager for Enbridge's Beaver Lodge Loop project.
And we'll just skip to number four there. Were you involved in the preparation of the Environmental and Cultural Resource Report, which is part of Enbridge's deviation request in this case?
Yes.
And is the purpose of your testimony today to describe the environmental and cultural resource matters pertaining to this deviation request?
Yes.
And with respect to the proposed deviations to the approved route, would you please describe how this compares, how the deviations compare with the approved route?
The Minuteman and additional workspace deviations have substantially similar impacts as the Public Service Commission approved route.
Were there any exclusion areas identified?
No.
Were there any avoidance areas identified?
No.
Will any of the Public Service Commission's selection criteria or policy criteria be impacted?
No, we concluded that the proposed deviations will have no adverse impacts on location, construction, and operation of the project as previously approved by this commission. nor will it alter any of the commitments provided in the Commission's policy criteria.
And has the study been completed with respect to cultural resources, wetlands, and protected species?
Yes, additional field survey work has been performed, with the results being that the State Historic Preservation Office of North Dakota by letter has concurred that there will be no historical properties affected by the route deviation. In addition, we have submitted a wetland delineation report, which did not identify any additional wetland impacts along the deviation route. There are no critical habitat areas.
And in your opinion, if the proposed deviation is constructed as set forth in the application and discussed at this hearing, will there be any significant long-term irreversible effects to the environment or cultural resources?
No.
This concludes our testimony, commissioners. We would offer exhibit number one.
Good. Are there any questions for Angela? None?
Thank you.
Anything further from commissioners? Members? Okay. Any questions, Mitch, or anything from staff, Pat?
I would just request the same findings of fact, one with the 20 days and one without for our evaluation.
Yes.
Or just one without, whichever you think is that's runs the greatest return on investment.
We'll say met both.
Yeah, right.
Any other questions, comments from the commission?
Maybe just one with the railroad again. So who talked to the railroad again? You did, right?
Our internal engineering group did.
Okay, so do they have any concerns that they've expressed other than the depth about any of this stuff moving around?
No. No, it's all in the application that was sent to them, which was changed from the original depth of cover that was proposed for the installation, which they came back and requested deeper.
Okay.
So from their request, we altered the design appropriately,
okay,
which would have incurred that additional temporary workspace need.
Did the railroad have any concerns when the new route got so close to their line run, so close parallel to it? Was there? It's not their easement, I guess.
We're outside of their.
Okay.
Their right away. So.
Okay.
And then Mitch, we were missing something in the first case, if you will. Do we have that in this second?
It's in this one.
It is okay.
And I do this one. You know, I just know your $140,000 was a lot less than the last one. Where's construction at on this one? When did it start?
Well, just to back up, they're starting from the west to the east.
Okay.
So these easterly deviations are kind of at the end, so that's why.
This is like 50 miles long.
This actually is 29 miles this year, and going from Stanley to Berthold this year, next year is the opposite to the west. But in terms of construction, where they're at right now is they're potholing a lot on line 82. They're probably, like I said, I can get you the details on our construction report, but they're probably about 20 to 30% complete on clearing or mowing, if you will. So our estimation for this westerly route deviation to be impacted would be coming up here on the 7th of September.
That's when you estimate to be here, is the 7th of September.
That's
on this case.
That's correct.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Okay. Anything else from the commission?
Anything else?
Staff from Enbridge?
Nothing, right. Commissioners, no.
Okay. Well, then it looks like our work is done. Thanks for the hearings today, and we'll wait for the information to be filed.
Thank you very much. Thanks.